Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. This week on the ABCA podcast, 2024 ABCA Hall of Fame class inductee, former College of Worcester head coach Tim Pedderini. In 38 seasons as the head baseball coach at the College of Worcester, Pedderini became one of the winningest NCAA Division III coaches of all time. From 1982 until his retirement in 2019, Pedderini led the Fighting Scots to a 1,243-461-6 record, ranking him 7th all-time in NCAA Division I wins. Under Pedderini, the Fighting Scots won a league-leading 19 conference championships and made 26 NCAA tournament appearances, advancing to the NCAA Division III World Series 6 times and finishing national runner-ups in 1997 and 2009. Go along with his 14 North Coast Athletic Conference Coach of the Year honors, Pedderini is also a 6-time ABCA Mideast Region Coach of the Year. 44-year lifetime member of the ABCA, Pedderini coached 59 All-Americans during his tenure, and his players received over 200 All-NCAC honors. Prior to taking over at Worcester in 1982, Pedderini taught and coached baseball at Fremont Ross High School in Fremont, Ohio. Let's welcome Tim Pedderini to the podcast. So are you still doing stuff at Worcester?
No.
Okay.
Completely retired.
I know you got the same email. You have that email address still, so.
Yes, I do still have that. I still keep the email address.
Yeah, that makes things easier.
What's that?
That makes things easier. That's nice that they allow you to do that.
Yeah, it really is. Worcester's been really good to me for a long time. And
they're not having you raise money? that's usually what the old guard does, is they move on to special assistant to the AD where they have to raise all the money.
No, I think they were just happy to get rid of me.
I highly doubt that.
Well, let's hope not anyway.
All right, here with Tim Pedderini, ABCA Hall of Famer this year, 38 seasons at the College of Worcester, 1,234 wins with a 729 winning percentage and 19 conference titles. So, Tim, thanks for jumping on with me.
My pleasure.
Is the state of Ohio the cradle of Division III baseball?
There's some great, great baseball in Ohio. It started a long time ago, and I think it's in real good hands right now. Those guys, they get after it and work hard. We didn't have to go far to look for good competition, that's for sure.
I'm wondering if Coach Harrison can make it 4-for-4 here with World Series. It's been rolling.
Yeah, Brian's really a good coach. And, you know, he's got a great situation at BW, very supportive, you know, and that's what it takes. You know, you got to have the support, and he's in a great community to do it. You know, and that's he got players. And, you know, and I think he's using the grad transfer to his advantage, and I've watched his teams play, and he's playing with some men.
Yeah, they are really physical. That's the thing that always stuck out to me the last couple of years when I've seen them, is they are extremely physical, but they also work at it in the weight room too.
Absolutely. And that's the secret. You got to, in this day and age, Bigger, stronger, faster.
Yep.
You got to do that. And that was one of the things, you know, we always stressed with our guys. We always felt like, you know, when we get on the field, we want to be the biggest, most physical team. Our ballpark in Worcester was not the biggest yard. And so we, you know, we hit a lot of home runs in it. And that's where the physicality comes in.
Yeah, but I think more coaches need to do that. If that's your ballpark and you're going to play a majority of your games at home, a little different some of the places I coached at, because you're going to be on the road more than you're going to be at home. But if you're going to play more home games and that's what your park plays to, then you've got to recruit guys that play to that ballpark.
Absolutely. And that's what we really tried to do. And we made that a point of emphasis with the young men we were recruiting to, you know, get them in the ballpark, show them and say, hey, listen, I'd throw up grass and say, see that wind blowing out? And, you know, there's a reason we have the national record for home runs. Be a part of that.
And then with the pitching staff then, are you trying to get – obviously you're trying to get guys to keep the ball down then, correct?
Yeah. Keep it in the ballpark. Give us a chance. Keep them under six and we got a shot.
Love it. Are you excited the Division III World Series is going back to Ohio?
I'm really excited. That's been in the works for quite some time. And, you know, I was involved in that a little bit with our conference. And, you know, we tried earlier, oh, gosh, must have been 15, 20 years ago, to get it to come to Ohio. And, you know, it's finally going to be there. And, the College World Series is such a great opportunity for fans to see college baseball at its highest, but for the players and teams and schools, it's really a great opportunity. And to have it in Ohio, hopefully it doesn't snow anything. You never know in May what can happen, but hopefully we'll get a good week
of weather. Day we're good. Hopefully by Memorial Day we're okay. You know, you've spoken quite a bit on the clinic circuit. What have you enjoyed about doing that?
Oh, you know, it's the interaction with the coaches. That's the biggest thing. And I enjoyed, you know, the speaking aspect of it and sharing ideas. And, you know, that's really what it's all about. I said in my convention speech, you know, I wasn't smartest or anything, but I was a really good thief. I stole from a lot of really good coaches. And, you know, I take my staff to watch different coaches practice and, you know, go to conventions, go listen to people, talk to people. And, you know, that was the key. I mean, you know, you hear something, see something, say, wow, that's a pretty good idea. Maybe I can incorporate some of that into my program. And, you know, so that was the biggest thing, getting a chance to speak and share with others and, you know, tell them about the Worcester way of doing things.
For a young coach that has not had to do that, give them some tips on speaking for the first time at either a state clinic, national clinic. Just give them some tips.
It's a little nerve-wracking, as you the first several times you do it, it's challenging to say the least, to make sure you're organized and, you know, you got to practice. That's the biggest thing. I was so worried at the convention. You know, everybody kept saying, oh, you got to be 6 to 8 minutes, 6 to 8 minutes. And I think the second speaker got up there and he went for 20. And I was like, oh, man, I've been shaving this thing down for, and I rehearsed it enough times. I was, you know, I was right at that 8 minute threshold. I said, well, maybe I could add a few more things as we're going. But
that's not the time to do it. I will tell anybody that. If you have it planned and you got it planned out, the last second is not the time to change anything.
That's for sure. And afterwards,
my wife said, bad.
Yeah, that's my wife said, well, you should have mentioned so-and-so or this. And I said, well, you know, I had the talk down and I really wanted to stick to it. So I didn't have to stare at my notes too often. But, you know, but that's the key. I think anytime you're, you know, speaking to your team, preparation, speaking at a clinic, preparation. And, you know,
and camps too. I think that's what helps. You know, if you're a young coach just trying to get into this thing, if you can work a ton of camps and you have to present to kids and clarify what you're doing, I think that's that next step for you. If you've done a lot of clinics or camps and you've been able to present in front of kids, then take the next step and try to clarify. I really like doing it because I think it forces you to to figure out what's really important and what maybe you need to leave out, and it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I was real fortunate early in my career, and I had a dear friend in Western Pennsylvania who ran camps, and he would have me and Bob Morgan in to run his camps. And I'm sure you know Bob. it was we went hard and for the week we were there, but you really got to interact with the kids, and you know, and again, just sharpen your presentation and what you're doing, and you know, reaffirm in your own mind how you want to go about things.
Yeah, if you want to see who can coach a little bit, go work camp with them. I mean, that was the thing I always enjoyed about working the million camps that I worked, is getting around other coaches. You can figure out, hey, who can actually coach, but also who wants to work too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, and it's so much fun, especially, you know, if you get to do it in the summertime when the weather's good and you're outside and you're going, it just really works. I'm sure you've done it a million times. 10, 15 years, you know, I'm getting ready to go 2 years ago to get knee surgery. I've got to have a meniscus repaired. And the doctor who was our team doctor at Worcester, he couldn't do it. He had to have back surgery. So he said, you're going to love our, we got a new young surgeon in the office. He'll take great care of you. So I went to meet him and he said, Coach, you don't remember me, but I was in your camp back when I said, well, I hope you're a better surgeon than you were a baseball player, or I'm going to be limping. And, the contacts is unbelievable.
Yeah. You don't realize it until later on and people start to pop up that are older, and you don't realize the type of impact, especially in the youth camp setting that you have on kids. I still work youth camps here in North Carolina. I'm getting ready to go do that tonight. I'll go throw BP to 8 to 12 year olds for 2 hours tonight for Scott Bankhead. But I do really like doing it because you don't realize the type of impact you have on kids until they get older.
Yeah. And that's, truthfully, that's the ones you really, the keeping the game going and keeping young people involved. There's so many other, and the more they can be involved in athletics, the more they can be involved in baseball, the better off they're all going to be, and the better off we're going to be for sharing it with them.
Who impacted you the most getting into coaching?
Oh, wow. I had a lot of, I was really fortunate. In high school, I played for great coach Ron Golden down in Columbus, Ohio, and Ron had a big impact on, really, he's the one who, got me exposure and went to Bowling Green. And Dick Young was the first head coach there. He recruited me to Bowling Green. And Dick was, as fine a person as you'd ever want to, just an unbelievable human being. And, really opened my eyes to, there was a lot more to the world than just baseball. But, and then Don Purvis came in to Bowling Green, and Don was, was still a very dear friend. And, I call Coach Purvis to this day to talk to him, bounce things off to him, but also check, make sure he's doing okay. But, those guys had great impact. And then, once I got into the coaching part, did the whole routine. I got Ron Polk's books and went to conventions and listened to Gordy Gillespie and, just so many opportunities to talk and share with people. And, so there's so many people who've impacted how I did it. Like I said, went, watched Danny Hall's practice. Danny was a great, great coach. Bob Todd at Ohio State, went down to watch him. My son played for Bob at Ohio State. So there's just a lot of people I contact with and got a chance to watch over the years.
Did it help you coach in high school first before you transitioned to Worcester?
Yeah, I think it did. I really wasn't ready, right off the bat. And I was actually assistant at the college, or it was Fremont Ross High School. And, got to watch there for a couple of years. And, when you go start your career in high school, I was coaching three sports and, working on getting a master's and all those things. You're kind of chasing your tail most of the time. But, got to coach at the high school level then for several years. And, You know, to this day, I still have great contacts with those young guys. You know, I had a couple of them that were at the Hall of Fame induction, and you know, got to share time with them and share a couple beverages with them over the course of the years, and it really did help, you know, get me prepared to go on to coach in college, and that was, you know, a big part of it.
Well, I think you've got to overload your schedule as a young coach so you figure out your time management skills. I think the more you can do, the better at an early age, because it forces you to be good with your time management.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, and you know how it is as a young coach. You do have so many things going on. And, you know, sometimes the preparation for my health class probably wasn't as good because I was too worried about baseball practice. But, but you know, those are things you have to learn to balance. And, you know, like you said, time management is so important. You know, that's one of the things I talk about at a lot of clinics. It's early, the football coaches I worked with. I was a football coach for a number of years, and football coaches, you know, are to the minute detail, and, you know, really, you know, those they're all crazy, but they're super, super organized. And it really, you know, learning that at an early age, I mean, I structured my practices along the lines of how a football coach would. We had this time for individual, this time for group, team time, you know, all of those factors went into practice schedule. And, you know, I think that really, really helped me.
Did you have to make many adjustments then with the coaching when you switched to the college side?
Yeah, you do. You know, especially at a school like Worcester, you know, academics are such a, you know, major part of it that, you know, you'd always have kids coming up late to practice because they had a late lab or, you know, had to meet with a professor or whatever. And so you're always making adjustments as you go. But, you know, again, I just think it helps you. You realize that there's things that everybody's got to get done. Everything, you know, has to, you know, fit in. And sometimes just so you stay a little bit later, you go a little bit earlier, whatever the day warrants, you got to work around that schedule and make it happen.
And that's part of having good kids, too, because, I mean, that's part of it. Best season I ever had, I missed 2 days a week of practice in the fall. My season,
really?
I was an All-American. But I had to put a lot of extra work in. But it just shows, like, if somebody, even your kids, if your kids can manage their time and still get their work in, it's, you know, I think sometimes fall ball gets overinflated on what you do and what you can't do. Because if you have a kid that's motivated, even if they're missing, they're still going to be fine.
Exactly. You know, we used to say it all the time, you know, especially again, going back to Ohio, you know, we were fortunate enough to get outside. It was probably going to be 35 degrees out and we were on the football field or something to try and, you know, get some time in. But the thing we'd always gauge is when practice was over, how many kids stayed extra to do their work, to get extra swings in the cage, to get some ground balls, you know. Kids coming up saying, you know, hey, you know, to one of the assistant coaches or to me or whoever, saying, hey, coach, can you hit me a few extra ground balls? Can you do this one? How about throwing a little bit? Let's go down to the cage. I really want to work on something. And, you know, and that's, you know, that's what you have to do. That's how you get to where you want to be, is have that work ethic and have the kids who've bought into that. And, you know, then you got a chance.
With 19 conference titles, a ton of conference titles, how'd you build consistency within the program?
Well, you know, the standards were always high. You know, we didn't want to settle for less. You know, when we did our goals early, you know, that was always, you know, top of the list to win the conference. And, you know, and we're fortunate to, once that started going, you know, we never recruited a kid came to Worcester and spent 4 years there who wasn't involved in a conference championship. And, you know, so that became a big sales pitch for us right out of the chute with young kids. And, you know, if you come here, you're going to play for conference championship, you're going to win conference championships, which automatically is going to get you into postseason and give you a chance to do all the other things on that list of goals that we're going to have written up so that, you know, we can have a chance of achieving those things. And that's, you know, that's how you want to approach it. But, you know, that was fortunate. Great assistant coaches along the way. Those guys were so loyal and dedicated. And, you know, Division III level, fortunate to have one assistant coach who's getting paid. So, you know, a lot of volunteers. One time on my staff, you know, I had a coach from the Ohio High School Hall who's in the Ohio High School Hall of Fame. And he drove 40 minutes every day to get to Worcester to coach with us. And, you know, another coach who never made a penny was with me for 17 years at Worcester. And then I had, you know, three other coaches on my staff who had been head coaches in college. So, you know, getting the right people in place really, really helped along those ways.
Did you have core values for the players for the program?
Well, you know, we did. We wanted them to, you know, be true to themselves first and foremost, you know. Their family was primary. You know, we used to say, you know, if tell kids recruiting them, you know, baseball is going to be important to you, but your family's first, your schoolwork's second. I don't have a problem being third. That works. I just don't want to be fifth or sixth. if I'm beyond third, we're going to have a problem. But being third works out pretty good. But, and we, you know, I think that really gave us great family ties with our program. I'm out in Arizona watching my grandson play right now. And last couple nights at the ballpark, we've had parents of one of our Worcester players who happens to be, you know, they winter in Arizona and they were at the ballpark. They called and said, "Hey, coach, we're coming over to watch your grandson play." And,
who's
that
was
us
with?
At the ball.
He's with
Ohio State.
He's with Ohio State. Awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. They open a series tonight with Arizona State. Should be fun. They got four games.
That's right.
With
they're
Arizona
Grand
State.
Canyon this weekend, aren't they?
They played them on Tuesday. Grand Canyon is really good.
Yeah.
Boy, they swing it.
Yeah. They've had a good Grand Canyon's had a good run here with their program. They've done a really good job. Hey, I was going to ask you, did Division I team stop scheduling you after you beat them?
You know, I love making those phone calls to people and saying, you know, hey, we'd really love to come play. It'd be a great opportunity. And, you know, and I didn't get a lot of callbacks after we got going there for a while. And
those are my scariest games, you know, and being in the upper Midwest, you had to schedule non-division ones to get home games. And those are always my scariest games that we played all year, because you knew if you didn't show up to play, you're going to get beat.
Yeah, exactly. I remember we had 2 years games with Ohio State, and the reason they scheduled us in the first place, because my youngest son, Terry, was playing down there. So, you know, Bob was a dear friend. He called and said, "Hey, you guys want to come down and play? It'd be a great opportunity." I said, "Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to." You know, Terry played third base, so I got to talk to him during the game. you miss so much as a coach. Missed their high school games. You know, didn't get to go. My wife was, she was a one-person wolf pack going to all those games all over the country traveling. But, you know, it was kind of neat when you get that opportunity to go and, you know, spend some time with them and coach against them. And in fact, we beat them the 1 year. It was pretty nice too. Bob said to me, he said, "I caught more grief losing that one ball game to you than Minnesota beating me in here." So
now you just have the two boys.
Yes. Two boys. My oldest son, Tim, he played for me at Worcester. He's the one with the three children.
Yep.
You know, our grandkids, you know, that's what we do right now. We're chasing grandkids all over the place. And me and Rhoda spend a lot of time in Florida. But, you know, we still have the house in Worcester, and that's where our grandkids live, in Worcester. And we go back. Today's a big day for the Pettorinis. My granddaughter, Tori, has probably her final high school basketball game tonight. They play in the tournament. They're up against a tough team. They probably won't win that game. And then we're out here tonight to watch my grandson Tyler play. So big night. And then we've got the 10-year-old. He's the phenom. Tanner's going to be the one. He's switch hitting already and doing a lot of stuff. So it's fun.
How did you know it was time to step away?
Well, you know, I've done it for a long time. And, you know, truthfully, it just seemed like it was the right time. You know, felt like we'd accomplished what we'd want to accomplish for the most part. And, you know, there was other things going on in our life that we thought, you know, hey, it's time to, you know, spend more time on us. And, you know better than anybody that coaching's all consuming. You know, there's no off season, there's no downtime. You're always involved with something, whether it's recruiting or, you know, trying to take care of a kid or going to a wedding and we just figured, hey, it's time. Thank God my wife, you know, had a tremendously successful career as a financial person and, you know, made a lot of money so that we could get a home in Florida. And we definitely didn't do it on the coach's salary. So we had the wherewithal to do it and go and figure, hey, let's spend some time together and really, you know, enjoy the time we have.
And I mean, 2019 wasn't that long ago. So you saw a huge shift in college baseball on the, you know, just the excitement about college baseball, how good college baseball got. What were some of your biggest things that stuck out about the changes in college baseball over the course of your career?
Wow. You know, again, following my grandson around, getting to go to all the Division I stadiums. Boy, the money people are pouring into stadiums and, you know, and even at the Division III level, you know, everybody's up north is playing on turf now. And, you know, and that's a huge factor. The game has really gotten to the point where it's well coached. It's well played. The competition level is really, really high. And, you know, I'm a baseball junkie. I love to go watch games, whether it's high school games, little, you know, whatever. And, you know, watching the skill level, you know, the amount of winter indoor facilities that people have, and kids are really working at it, trying to become better all the time. And, you know, I think it's showing. The baseball at the college level's improved dramatically. And, you know, and I think even at the high school level, players are getting better. Kids are, you know, bigger, stronger. You know, they're in the weight rooms. They're throwing harder. They're hitting it farther, faster. It's a great time for baseball right now.
I think that's the biggest adjustment over the course of the years is the amount of facilities and options that kids have in the off season to improve, whether that's in the weight room or on their skills. I think that's the biggest adjustment that baseball's made as a whole is the off season training's gotten so much better for kids.
Yeah, it really has. And, you know, I think if a parent really does their homework, you know, because there's a lot of people have you doing some things that, you know, maybe aren't. There's a lot of bad coaches out there too, but
that's,
you know,
in anything. There's good and bad in every profession. It's not just baseball. There's good and bad in every profession.
Well said. You know, if you do your homework and you can get your young son, daughter in front of some good coaches, that really helps. And I think it takes a lot of the pressure off the parent having to try and, you know, do all the coaching themselves, especially at an early age. They can get their, you know, youngster in front of somebody, and the kids are always more receptive. They get to listen more. They get to see more. And like I said, with the facilities and the, you know, it really does help enhance their ability to be better at the game.
Do you feel like Division III was the best fit for you? Because it is really a great blend of academics and athletics at Division III.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, that we were kind of the perfect storm, I think. We got to go to Worcester and, you know, and had some success there and, you know, and had other opportunities that, you know, came up and got some offers and thought, you know, geez, this is really – you know, we live in a great city. Worcester's just a great city to raise a family in. We had a great school. They're super supportive. This is really what we want to do. And, you know, the Division III model really worked for us and gave us an opportunity to, you know, get the type of kids that would really buy in. We had some phenomenal young players and, you know, unbelievable smart kids. You know, I've had many kids who I said to them, geez, if I ever go down with the big one, I hope, because they were pre-med, I said, I hope I wake up and look up and you're, because I know how smart you are. You'll take good care of the old guy and get me through, because, you know, because they were going to go out and be great doctors or whatever they were going to do.
You're an outfielder at Bowling Green. Did you stay coaching outfielders once you took over a program, or did you hand that off to somebody else?
Yeah, you know, when you start in high school, you're coaching everybody, and and so you do that. But once you got going, I spent a lot of time with the hitters, and that was really pitchers gave me a headache, so I was always fortunate and had some great pitching coaches. Barry Craddock, you know, was with me for a long, long time, and Barry's a phenomenal pitching coach, and he's a great coach overall, and had Jeff Bricker working with me for a long time, and those guys really handled it. So I had no worries, you know, about knowing how hard they were going to work those young guys, and they had the expertise. You know, we'd gone talked, we'd self clinic so many times. So I knew what I wanted them to teach and how they were going to go about doing it. So it really let me focus more. And, you know, if we had the staff to, you know, take the outfielders, I would do that. If not, then, you know, you coach them up and, you know, get out there with them and do it. And that's, you know, that's how we approached it. But, you know, my big focus was on the hitters.
I think that's what the best ones do. They fill in as needed.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to. I mean, and that's the thing. And, and again, it goes back to preparation and, spending time at camps and, you know, doing different things. I talked to a lot of camps and clinics about pitching, and, you know, little did the audience know, I really didn't know that much about it, but I was parroting what somebody else had said and was talking about it. So, you know, it worked out okay.
Simpler is better sometimes, though. I think people overcomplicate the hitting and the pitching piece of it.
I agree with that completely. I love watching, you know, all the hitters talk, you know, launch angle, and I'm sure you've talked to, you know.
There's a time and a place for all of it. There really is. And, you know, we've talked about that a lot on the podcast, is once you get closer to competing, then a lot of that stuff needs to go away. You know, especially in the college season with a shorter season. I get it on the pro side. They play a lot of games, so you got a lot longer to go. But on the college side, when you don't play as many games, you need to really get centered in on going out and trying to win. And whatever your team needs to do to win that day, that's what we need to focus on. And the rest of it can wait till the off season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that was, you know, a lot of times people, you know, coaches would say, coach, we're using, he's supposed to pitch tomorrow. Well, we got a chance to win today.
Yes.
We'll worry about tomorrow.
You may not get that chance tomorrow. I think that's right. Like, we got a chance to win today, so we need to win today, and then we'll figure out tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, and, you know, we've discovered some guys doing that to say, well, guess what, you know, yeah, you're a reliever, but you're starting today, and, you know, go as long and as hard as you can, and then we'll, you know, put somebody else in. And, you know, sometimes they went a lot longer than we ever thought they could. So, you know, that was always our thing, is whatever we got to do today to get the job done, that's what we're going to do, and we're going to get after it and hopefully get the job done today.
Did you tweak your practice planning much over the years, or was it pretty consistent, or were there things you added? You talked about being a thief. Were there things you added towards the end that maybe you weren't doing in the beginning?
Yeah, we did tweak it a lot. You know, it seems like as the more you know, the stretching became more and more. It used to be, you know, we go up on the field and, you know, okay, go play catch and let's go. And, you know, and then as practice, you know, we spent more time stretching and doing the flexibility type things to, you know, and enhance different things. And, you know, so it did, the practice schedule did evolve. One of the things we always used to sell our kids on, the first thing at the first practice of the year, we'd take batting practice. Because I'd say, I want those hitters to know just how, if it's the first thing you do in the very first practice, that tells you how important it is. And every one of those young guys is going to go back to the dorm and call dad and say, and dad's going to say, how was practice? What did you guys do at practice? And, well, first thing we did was hit. And sometimes that probably was a hard conversation for pitchers, but the hitters sure got the message that, you know, the offensive side of things was going to be very, very important. And, you know, we said lots of times, we're going to play great hitters and we'll find a place for them defense. I always felt like I could improve somebody more defensively. We'd find a way to improve their skills defensively, but hitting, you know, you gotta have to be special to be a great hitter. And, so we spent a lot of time there.
How much time in BP were you working situationally, or are you just letting them swing?
No, we'd have a round backside and, you know, incorporate all the hit and runs and different things that way, move them up, get them in. You know, lots and lots of adjustments. We used to do the angle hitting. That was a big thing for a few years. We'd throw at angles and then, you know, we'd go redo it, and it was hard sometimes making sure we get left-handed hitters together and right hand, so we got to move the platform over and all the other things to go with it. But
that's where the machines have come in. You know, the machines have gotten so good now, that's where the machines have really helped with being able to do some of the extreme training with angles, because it's hard on a BP guy to create that angle and throw it strikes from there sometimes too. So it's gotten a lot easier with the machines now.
Yeah, the machines anymore. I mean, the technology of everything. I mean, I'm amazed anymore.
That's awesome.
I talk with my grandson a lot, and you know, he's telling me, well, we've got this thing in the dugout and this thing in the dugout. Coaches can see, you know, where every pitch is. And I said, yeah, I'm not sure that's legal to have that in the dugout. He said, oh, it's hidden in there. Nobody sees it. I said, well, I guess that's okay.
Synergy.
The technology and the machines. I've talked to a lot of coaches, and they say, you know, they'll do their scouting report, and now they know if this pitcher throws 86 miles an hour, they can set their machines up pregame to throw 86 miles an hour at this spin rate. And, you know, breaking balls, and, you know, it's hard to beat that when you're preparing kids.
I think that's why the offense has finally caught up to the pitching, just because coaches have done a better job of trying to replicate what they're going to see in games with what they're going to see in training.
Yeah, I agree. It's unbelievable anymore. You know, the different things and, you know, the tools that they have, you know, to see exit velos and launch angles and all of those things. It's all a great tool if you know how to use it, and if you can have the time to do it, and, you know, and that's a big part of it. But coaches have got so much better, I think, at managing that time and giving, you know, the kids the very best opportunities. Like I said, I think offense is really, you know, paying off because of it.
What do you feel like you did indoor practice-wise that maybe was better than some other schools?
Oh, wow. You know, for a long time, we were working out in the gym. And, you know, we had pretty good facilities in the sense that even when we were in gym, we had different, three different gyms we could go into. So, you know, we'd have pitchers in one and infielders in another and outfielders in another one. And, you know, and then a separate area for our batting cages so we could do that. And, you know, so we really tried to maximize, you know, that, and you know how it is at small schools. You know, we had an hour and 45 minute block before the softball team came in or the lacrosse team or whoever. We had time where we had to share with the golfers. Luckily, the golf coach at Worcester was a former baseball player, so he let me sneak a little bit of his time. So, but, you know, you budget times, you got different teams coming and going. But, and then, you know, the last several years, we had an indoor facility where, you know, the college built a field house, and that made life a lot easier. So you really had to, you know, you can have eyes on everybody because they were all there, and we had space to do it. And, you know, you can take a full infield instead of, you know, trying to adjust. Oh, we got to move, try to put first base over there in the corner so we can get close to the right distance. And, you know,
we used to coach pitch with the orange Kinko balls inside in the gyms with just an infield.
And
about as good as you could get inside, but we're on a gym floor, so you can't use baseballs to hit with. So we actually use the orange Kinko balls inside.
Yeah, we used to have we played games inside with, you know, and then, you know, when somebody hit one up in the lights and the light broke, then we got to get the broom out and we got to, you know, sweep it up and hopefully, you know, get the, you know, you have a good enough relationship with the custodians in the building. They come in and replace the lights before the AD found out. Then he'd say, you know, what are you doing breaking out the lights in the gym? We got basketball game tomorrow.
Do you have a fail forward moment? Do you have something you thought was going to set you back, but looking back now, it helped you move forward?
Oh, God, you know, probably losing first time and lost the national championship game. That really set us back, but this, I think it helped motivate us, helped, you know, keep us grinding, moving forward. You know, you lose that game and, you know, boy, that's the end of the world. And, you know, we're never going to come back from that. And, you know, it was the same way, you know, probably, you know, just thinking about it early in my career, I remember going for my first interview at a college and got, you know, thought of, oh, this is the dream school. You know, got to get this one. And went and interviewed and went back for a second interview and got the call, didn't get the job. And I thought, oh my God, this is the end. I'm going to be not that there's anything wrong with coaching high school, but I'm going to be a high school coach the rest of my life. I'm never going to get the opportunity to get into a college. And then, you know, the Worcester job came open and, you know, probably better prepared the second, third time you interview. And you do get better at those things the more you do it. And
what were some adjustments you made? Because I had the same thing throughout the course of my career where I'd get turned down for jobs. What adjustments did you make? You don't get that first one. What adjustments do you make for the interview for the second one and third one?
Oh, wow. I think, you know, I probably wasn't, you know, as organized and as prepared as I needed to be as far as, you know, I had a practice plan drawn up, but, you know, then I got to the point where, okay, here's my manual and here's how we're going to do it. And this is all the aspects I think that have to go into the program. Talked about recruiting, you know, and the first time you go, you say, well, you know, this is, well, as you go on, you say, well, here are some of my contacts with the professional scouts and people like that who are going to help steer kids. You know, when you're at a small school with limited resources, you know, in the 80s, finding out where all the players were. And I was fortunate enough to have some outstanding contacts who I knew, you know, from Youngstown and Connie Mack baseball, they were going to let me know who the top prospects were in that area. And again, just being in Worcester, I mean, in 2 hours time, we could get to Columbus, you know, Cleveland, Toledo, Pittsburgh. We could get, there was in that radius, there were a lot of great young baseball players. And then as the college became better known, you know, then, our reach even got bigger. Then we started getting kids from all over the country to come to Worcester and, you know, the head first camps and all those things. We started, you know, being involved in those. So, you know, it takes a different mindset. But, you know, it's all part of the growth that goes into it.
What about you for evening or morning routines? You're in great shape still, so do you do anything in the morning or the evenings that you really like?
I'm hit that golf ball a lot.
That's going to be mine. When I retire, be hitting a golf ball.
Yeah, I love playing golf, and we're fortunate the place we live in Worcester, or in Florida, we've got 27 holes right in my backyard, and we get up in the morning and go out, sit on the lanai and drink our coffee and eat a little fruit, and then I've got a golf cart sitting in my garage. I jump in the golf cart and got a group of guys I like to play golf with, and we go out and play do that. If I'm home chasing the grandkids, I'm either throwing batting practice to the 10-year-old or chasing balls that my granddaughter's shooting, and doing those types of things, trying to stay as active as possible. That's really, really important.
What was the best advice you got early on in coaching?
Probably just, the kids were the key, and do everything you can to, enhance the experience for them. And that's what we tried to do, make it as, the best situation, with, Division III, sometimes your resources are limited. Some, our first several trips when I was at Worcester, we were going down trying to get vans from a car dealer and so that we could take a spring trip. Worcester, we had a 2-week spring trip and, trying to raise enough money so we could be gone for 2 weeks. So, because we didn't have the budget to be gone, staying home. I remember going down to FIT in Florida and staying in the team room, which was basically, cots in a gym, and, trying to do that. But just trying to make it the best experience for the players, I think that was the real key. Understanding that it wasn't about me or, it was about the players. We wanted them to enjoy it. And when you recruit the right people, you know how bad they want to win, and they want to win as bad as I wanted to win. So that made it a good mesh.
My dad had a lot of great one-liners, but one of his favorite ones was, recruiting's like shaving. If you miss a day, you look like poop.
Well, I got up this morning. I was ready for you this morning. It's out in Arizona, that 8 o'clock, the 8 o'clock start was pretty. So 7 hours shaving this morning.
Had a baby. Did you ever get bad advice? Yeah.
Oh gosh, not really. I don't. If I did, I didn't remember it for very long.
That's a good thing.
You move on quick. You try to sort through everything, and but there's no shortage of advice that's out there, that's for sure. But I was really fortunate. I had some great mentors. Al Van Wee was a phenomenal athletic director, basketball coach at the College of Western. He's the one who hired me to go in there, and coach was great. And I'd go into his office early, and some days he'd shake his head and say, "Pedrini, we're not doing it that way. You are not going to get away with pulling that stunt, so don't even try." But I remember going in there early, and Al would always, he'd have a copy of the Wall Street Journal in there, and he'd say, "I say, Coach, he said, nope, here's where you got to put that TIAA crap involved, and you got to put the maximum amount in there, because, as a young coach, I'm thinking, geez, so how am I going to, what am I going to do with practice?" And he's telling me, "Nope, you got to figure for 40 years down the road, you got to make sure you've got all this stuff taken care of."
That is the one thing with being full-time at the college level, though, the benefits, like the salary may not always be great, but the benefits are phenomenal, where if you can hang in there long enough, you're going to be okay on the back end for retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's,
you don't think about that in the beginning. I'm lucky my dad was really sharp with that got a hold of me, even just putting small amounts away in the beginning. But all that adds up over time. You don't see it, but I'm just lucky that my dad was good enough on that side of it. And I still pay attention to it a lot now.
Yeah. I mean, that's, You know, it's unbelievable because, you know, as a young coach, that's the least of your worries.
It
but,
is.
you know,
But it
thinking about
needs to
stuff like
be
that.
like, you need to have somebody get a hold of you and be like, hey, I know it doesn't seem like it right now, but you need to put small amounts away because you're going to look up in 20, 30 years and be really happy that you did that.
Absolutely. That's, you know, that couldn't say it any better than that. You just have to do it. And getting that advice, I mean,
I did
not
beat our
all about.
Office. We're competitive in the office. I did beat our office on percentage for retirement last year.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
That's luck. That's dumb luck. I was lucky I switched some things over last spring.
That's why I always say Mary's smart. My wife was a financial planner for years, and that's what my young son does. He's a financial
it's
guy.
A great profession.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, they learned well. They learned well from their mother.
That's awesome.
Both my boys. all their brains from their mom, that's for sure.
What does it mean to you going into the ABCA, the Hall of Fame this year?
It's a, you know, culmination of, you know, all the hard work, all the effort, all the time spent. You know, that's the ABCA is just, you know, that's the gold standard. That's what, you know, been a member for over 40 years and, you know, been to a million conventions and a lot of the Hall of Fame banquets and sat out there, you know, not initially, but, you know, after you're into your career for 20, 25 years, you think, geez, those guys are, you know, those are the guys. And you walk around that and you see those pictures of them in the hallway and you say, geez, that's where you want to be. And, you know, and then you learn it's not just about how many wins and losses, but what you're doing with clinics and camps and the youth camps. So all those things get factored into it. And, you know, so you, not only does it make you a better coach, it makes you a better person. And, you know, the group, I'm fortunate
enough
to go in
this year. It was a great group.
Yeah, it really was. And sitting up at the Coach Morris was on my one side and Coach Hall is just down from me. And it was an interesting dynamic to say the least. And, you know,
was it different
real
for you this year because you were going in? Did it feel different for you?
Yeah, it did.
What was different, you know, about it?
Well, it was kind of funny. The first thing we did when we got to, you know, to Dallas and we got to the convention hall, and, you know, I had to go back and register, and we're there and, you know, saw the pictures on the wall, and it was kind of funny. There was a young guy with two other older gentlemen standing there looking right at my picture. And I came up behind him. And I said, boy, is that a good looking guy up there on the wall? And the one older gentleman turned and he said, that's you, isn't it? And I said, yeah, it is. He said, well, you know, my son who was standing there with him, he says, he's going to be the new assistant coach at Worcester. He just got hired. I said, well, that's great. Let me introduce myself. So I introduced myself and we got to talk. And it turns out his father had coached against me years and years ago. He was down at Flagler in Florida and we played Flagler. And he says, yeah, you know, and, but it, again, the connections, the ties, all of that made it a little bit different. And, you know, it was a very, very humbling experience to, you know, and Craig, when got the, you know, I'd hoped for to get that phone call for several years, but when Craig called, I was driving at the time, and you know how it is with cell phones, you get a million phone calls. I'm driving, the phone ring, and I said, I don't recognize that number. And it doesn't say it's a scam, so I think I'm going to take this call just to be safe. Who knows? It's probably Medicare or somebody calling me or to renew my auto policy or something, but it turned out to be Craig, and it was a great phone call. And, you know, I think I've been on a high since that phone call, and the banquet was super, super special. We had a lot of people come back. Like I said, guys who I coached in high school were there. Lots of guys who I coached in college were there, assistant coaches. I had an assistant coach I hadn't seen in 30 years, and he calls the coach, and I told him, I said it at the bank. I said, he's here, but I won't recognize him because it's been 30 years. And I didn't recognize him, but once I got a chance to see him, and I recognized him then. But, you know, it unbelievably special and unbelievably humbling to be in with that group, and just knowing, you know, there is some wisdom that comes with age, and you gain an appreciation for just what a great organization the ABCA really is, and all the outreach they're doing with the young kids, all of the growth that the, you know, that it's taken on over the years. And it's really, really amazing. I'm super proud to be in it and to get that recognition.
Any other final shots or final thoughts or shout outs before I let you go watch baseball in the desert?
I'm going to go do that today. My youngest son was here with us at the beginning of the trip. Ohio State's out here for 10 days. My youngest son and his wife came out for the first 4 days, and then he had to go back and go to work. My older son, whose son plays for Ohio State, is coming in tonight, and he'll be here for the rest of the weekend. So we're going to get to spend time with them. And that's just a great, great time to watch baseball and, you know, spend time.
Well, you're getting some of that time back now as a grandfather. You're getting some of that time back now that you missed a little bit. So you're getting a chance to hang out at the ballpark with your kids now.
I went to the Ohio State was off yesterday. They practiced. I went out to practice and watch practice because, you know, I'm a baseball junkie. Anytime I get a chance to watch practice, it's good. But I'm a really good coach sitting up there in the stands.
of course you are.
I know when they should be pinch hitting or running or whatever, taking the pitcher out. I haven't missed one yet.
My dad and brother used to text me during our games at Western. They'd be throwing stuff at me. I'm like, you two forgot how hard it was to coach. You two been away from it for too long. You forgot how hard it is to coach.
It is really hard. It's so hard. You got so many different things pulling at you and stuff. But it's a lot better sitting up there, you know, drinking a cold one and eating popcorn.
Sure. All right, Tim, thank you so much for your time. All right, enjoy your time down there. But it's great talking to you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Take care.
Always great to interview our Hall of Famers. There's so many common denominators among all of our inductees. Their love, drive, and passion for coaching players is what sticks out to me the most. Thanks again to Coach Pedrini for his time. Thanks again to Jim Richardson, John Litchfield, Zach Hale, Matt West, and Antonio Walker in the ABCA office for all their help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @coachb_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.